This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show. Today on the James Altucher Show.
A few weeks ago, we had on Steven Pinker talking about what it means to be a rational person and how most people are irrational. So there's a test that I just gave Jay, the producer, and Robin, my wife. It's called the Cognitive Reflection Test, and it's a test to see how rational you are. So let's see how they do.
Yeah, make sure you didn't touch the microphone too much.
I like touching my microphone.
Stop touchy-touchy.
He's like caressing it.
I know. It's not rational to touch your microphone.
It's not rational to touch my microphone, but a lot of things I do are irrational. We are all, as pointed out by Steven Pinker last week on our podcast about rationality, we are all pretty much irrational creatures. And that's a good thing. So Daniel Kahneman famously won the Nobel Prize for doing research on cognitive biases. Cognitive biases are like shortcuts the brain takes in many situations where it uses fast intuitive thinking as opposed to thoughtful, calculated, reflective thinking. So that's, he called it system one thinking, which is more intuitive and very fast, and system two, which is longer term. Or maybe it's the other way around. I forget.
I like the naming system right there. System one and system two. It's easy. These are a bunch of scientists.
He could have called it like intuition. Yeah. And the other one is like calculation.
Yeah. Or, you know how they always name a planet, you know, with their name? He just named it like system one and system two, you know?
Maybe he's a very humble guy then. Yeah. Like, he didn't call it the Kahneman way of thinking is the thoughtful way of thinking. Like,
right.
So you know, like here's an example. Like, confirmation bias. You see this every day on Twitter. Mm-hmm. People will only listen to facts or hear facts that confirm what they already believe. They won't even hear sometimes things that they don't believe. Right. Or they'll dispute anything that doesn't already correspond with what they believe. That's called confirmation bias. Then I forget what this one is called, maybe availability bias. But if you own a Toyota Corolla, for instance, you might see more Toyota Corollas on the street than you used to before you owned a Toyota Corolla. Mm-hmm. Or there's Dunning-Kruger bias, which is my favorite, which is that nine out of 10 people think that they're an above average driver, which is impossible. Like, only 4 out of 5 are. But Dunning-Kruger bias makes you think you're better at things than you are. And right. I am a perfect example of someone who has that bias all the time.
What makes somebody like that?
Everybody has these biases. Everybody is like that. So whatever you do, that whatever activities and skills that you do frequently, you will think you're better than average at it, whether you are or you aren't.
It's funny. I think it's interesting in the sense that even if you realize you have Dunning-Kruger bias, that it's very hard to avoid that biases.
Yeah, Daniel Kahneman thinks you can't avoid it. It's impossible, even if you're aware of them completely.
Right.
And other people are more, I've had a lot of podcasts about this, where I think you can avoid it a little bit if you're aware of it. But like, a great one that's used in persuasion is anchoring bias. So let's say you're asking your boss for a raise, and your boss says to you, well, how much of a raise do you want? And you say, well, I was thinking of a $1 million raise. And then, of course, that's ridiculous. He's not going to give you a $1 million raise. But that anchors your boss at a high number so that statistics show they're more likely to give you a higher raise than they would if you make a joke, well, I just want to make $10 a year. So if you say, I want to make $10 a year, and you compare that to the group of people who say, oh yeah, I was thinking $1 million a year, both are ridiculous, but the people who ask for $1 million a year will get bigger raises.
Right.
And there's like Wikipedia lists like 200 biases. Now, somebody came up with a test, and this is in Steven Pinker's book, but this test was developed by psychologist Shane Frederick, and it's called the Cognitive Reflection Test. And It measures basically whether you use more system one thinking, which is the think quickly without reflection, you know, and that's sometimes called intuition, but sometimes people just think too fast. Like, they should slow down and think things out more reflectively. And system two thinking, again, requires conscious thought and effort. There's three questions, and I'll describe, and I'm going to ask only you three. These three questions, and keep track of your answers. Can you keep track of your answers?
Yeah.
And everybody listening should keep track of their answers. Mm-hmm.
Don't tell anybody.
And you write them down if you want. So, okay.
Can I say one thing? Can I ask
you
one?
Yes, you can say one thing.
Like, sometimes you may be, you know, thinking like number one with one situation, or maybe you would think about doing it like thinking number two in a different situation. Is that right? I mean, like, okay.
Right. It's not, system one thinking is not bad, and system two thinking is not good, which I think is a mistake people think. Because we need to, like, in this description of the cognitive reflection test, this one article I'm reading basically says, oh, you think without reflecting. But that's the same as intuition. Mm. Some things, like if you meet a person and you have to decide really quickly whether, I don't know, you like them or not, like, let's say speed dating or whatever, or a sales guy shows up at the door and you have to decide if they're trustworthy or not, you use your intuition. You can't, you don't know anything about them. So sometimes you have to have good intuition. But this test doesn't measure whether your intuition is good or not. It just mentions whether you're more intuitive or more what they would call thoughtful and reflective.
Right.
But again, that might be an inaccurate description. It might be more that you calculate more deeply all the ramifications of something. And intuition might mean you just trust your gut and instincts. And
so it's just not a right or wrong. It's just the way that you function.
There will be right or wrong answers for this test. But
it's only two questions.
There's only three questions, and there's no right or wrong score. It just, well, we'll see. We'll talk about it more after I give you the test. So, okay, listen to the first question and write down your answer, and we'll go over the answers at the end. First question is, so a bat and a ball cost $1.10 in total, $1 and one dime, $1.10, and it's a bat. You're buying a bat and a ball. The bat costs $1 more than the ball. How much does the ball cost? So write down your answer and tell me when you're ready to go.
Oh, we go one by one?
Yeah, I'm not going to give you the answer. I'm going to just go into the next question.
Oh, okay.
So a bat and ball cost $1.10. I put the question in the chat, and anyone listening can just rewind a little bit and hear again. A bat and a ball cost $1.10 in total. The bat costs $1 more than the ball. How much does the ball cost? Okay, ready for the next question? Yes? Jay?
Yeah.
Ready?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right. If it takes 5 machines 5 minutes to make 5 widgets, how long would it take 100 machines to make 100 widgets? So I'll ask it again. If it takes 5 machines 5 minutes to make 5 widgets, how long would it take 100 machines to make 100 widgets? Dun, 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 dun. I can't do that too much, or else it's like a trademark protection, right?
Right, yeah.
Or copyright protection. Ready for the next one?
These are all math questions.
No, well, yes, but
yeah,
but
it sort of
but
is,
they're,
yeah.
They're simple math questions, but they trigger various cognitive biases.
They trigger hating math, but okay, go ahead.
I'm Asian, but I'm bad at math, so you might have a chance.
I'm Jewish and I go broke all the time, so we're all kind of messed up.
Right.
So, in a lake, there is a patch of lily pads. Every day, the patch doubles in size. If it takes 48 days for the patch to cover the entire lake, how long would it take for the patch to cover half of the lake? So I'll ask it again. In a lake, there's a patch of lily pads. Every day, the patch doubles in size. If it takes 48 days for the patch to cover the entire lake, how long would it take for the patch to cover half of the lake?
This is a serious math question right here. This seems like algebra.
According to Steven Pinker, this is going to conclude. This is going to determine if you guys are rational or not. And by the way, if you've seen this, it's very interesting. If you've seen this test before, or for anybody listening, if you've done this test before, it has no bearing on whether you answer correctly right now, by the way. There's an interesting study on that.
Can you repeat it one more time?
Okay, let's use a patch of ice instead. That's a little, in a lake, there is a patch of ice. Every day, the ice doubles in size. If it takes 48 days for the ice to cover the entire lake, how long would it take for the ice to cover half of the lake?
Well, it's interesting. Also, like, just to put it out there, no Google is allowed.
No Google is allowed.
Yes.
Who are you telling me? Me? But, is that who you're talking
about? No, not to listen.
Don't cheat, Robin.
I'm not. Yeah.
Don't cheat.
It's not. It's okay, Jay.
Robin is very smart, but I've noticed, Robin, you're not the fastest Googler anyway.
Hey. I think Robin has to pick up the phone, you know? I'm not the phone, you know?
Yeah, she has to ask Alexa. We would hear her if, like, Alexa was saying, the lake would go. Take the ice. Okay. So ready? Here, I'm gonna say the first question again, and then I'll say the answer. Or then you'll tell me your answers. So a bat and a ball cost $1.10. Mm-hmm. The bat costs $1 more than the ball. How much does the ball cost? Jay?
I would say 10 cents.
Robin?
10 cents.
The answer is 5 cents. Because
I knew that was a trick question.
So,
I hate these questions.
If the ball costs 10 cents and the bat costs $1 more than the ball, that means the bat costs $1.10.
Oh, but so why the answer is 5 cents?
Because if the ball costs 5 cents and the bat costs $1 more than the ball, then the bat costs $1.05.
Right.
And
five
the ball
cents.
Costs $1.
It is.
So the whole thing together costs $1.10.
So what does that mean?
Nothing yet. If it takes 5 machines, 5 minutes to make 5 widgets, how long would it take 100 machines to make 100 widgets? What did you put down, Jay?
One minute.
Don't change your answer now. How long did it? What did you put down?
1 minute.
1 minute?
Yeah.
What?
How'd you get? Okay.
Wait. I could be wrong. Shit.
No. Robin, what did you put down?
Wait. Can you do the question again?
Didn't you put down an answer? Didn't you write down an answer?
Yeah, I did, but I want to.
No. Just tell me your answer first, then I'll read it again.
I don't think I heard it right.
I think you probably got it right, but I think I got
it wrong. You
probably
got it right, yeah. What'd you put down?
You ready for me?
Yeah.
I don't like this. So I'm
not. There's no bad or good.
Yeah,
there's right and wrong answers, but there's no bad or good, right. And I'll tell you why in a second.
Okay. I think my first answer is right, but my second answer is wrong. So that's why I think I got it wrong.
If the machines can make, can you just repeat it?
If it takes 5 machines, 5 minutes to make 5 widgets. Mm-hmm. So 5 machines take 5 minutes to make 5 widgets.
Yeah.
How long would it take 100 machines to make 100 widgets?
Okay. So I was going to say 100 minutes.
Yes. So most people say that. And the answer is.
Okay. I think, can I say the answer is 5 minutes.
Yes, the answer is 5 minutes. Because what happens is that 5 machines, each machine is making, each machine is making a widget, and it happens to take them each machine takes 5 minutes to make a widget. Yeah. Now there's 100 machines, you're making 100 widgets, takes 5 minutes.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Okay. So now, but by the way, the most people, 80% of the people say 10 cents for the first question, which is what you said, and 80% of the people say 100 minutes, which is what you guys said.
I'm just like a normal person. Yeah.
No, you're not normal. You're like everybody.
And also, like, I think the reason why I changed my answer to 1 minute is because I did like a math thing. Okay, it's 5 machines take 5 minutes. So that's like 1 machine take 1 minute. I did way too much math. Yeah, I did too much math.
In a lake, there is a patch. There's a patch of ice. Okay, it's a small little patch. But every day, the patch doubles. The patch of ice doubles in size. If it takes 48 days for the patch to cover the entire lake, how long would it take for the patch to cover half of the lake? Jay?
I have two answers for this, but I don't know which one is right. I would say 12.
Why 12?
Because it's double in size, so it's not constant. So it's linear, right?
Okay.
So you have to square of power, whatever it's called.
And Robin, what do you say?
I'm going to say what 24 or like 80% of the people are going to say, 24.
Okay, let me see what the common answer is on that one.
I'm just cutting it in half.
So, the intuitive answers to these questions that System 1 gives are 10 cents, 100 minutes, and 24 days. Here's the thing, though. The patch doubles in size every day. Okay, that's the key phrase. So actually, I'll give you another chance to think about this for a second. If it's doubling in size every day, the patch of ice, and in 48 days, it covers the entire lake. So how many days would it take for the patch to cover half of the lake?
It would be 12 days.
No.
No?
No.
47 days. Because on the 47th day, it's half the size of the lake, and then it doubles every day.
Yeah.
So on the 48th day, it covers the entire lake.
So double its size. So on the 47th, imagine on the 47th day, it's already half the lake.
Then right. So it's about, size. And remember, every day it doubles in size, the patch of ice.
Oh.
So if on the 48th day, it's the entire lake, and you're asked how many days would it take to cover half the lake, well, on the 47th day, it's half the lake, and it's about to double again.
Right.
So then it would cover the entire lake on the 48th day.
Yeah. So I did a mistake.
Yeah. So on 47 days is the answer. How long would it take for the patch to cover half the lake? 47, because then it doubles again, and it covers the whole lake on the 48th day.
Yeah. So I think too much. So I think too much. That's why I'm like, I put too much math in it. I'm like, okay. So that
Jay, if you put too much math in it, how come you didn't get the correct answers? You got the correct answers on number two. You got the correct answer on number two.
Like after I read way too long. By the way, this is all in English. That's like second language to me. You know, if it's Chinese, maybe I'll get it better.
Are you making excuses, Jay? I'm taking it.
But I think the last question, I think I do too much math, and then at the end I still like doubt myself a little bit, because I'm like, if it takes 12 days, it would be way bigger of a patch of ice on those 48 days. So I know I'm gonna be wrong at that. The question's ready.
I'm very consistent, so that's good. You know, like again, this measures, it doesn't really measure anything. It's not like related to IQ or anything like that. It just measures how much right now you're using system one thinking, which is more the fast, intuitive, versus calculating and really, you know, checking your answer and thinking about, you know, were you reflective or just this was your gut? And so it makes sense. If a bat and a ball cost $1.10, the bat costs $1 more than the ball, how much does the ball cost? 10 cents seems like the right answer, because then you add $1. It's $1.10, but then you have to actually read it over and say, "Oh wait, no. If the ball costs 10 cents, that means the bat costs $1.10. You add $1 to the price of the ball, and that means the total would be $1.20 instead of $1.10. So 5 cents plus $1.05 is $1.10. And then you know, you have to kind of do a little extra step of thinking, and because the correct response requires you to use system two thinking, and the incorrect response is more the intuitive, or, you know, you're not really reflecting on it. You're just, this is your gut talking. And, you know, it's only three questions. Does it work? It does tend to be correlated to various, you know, statistical thinking. Do people understand statistics and probabilities? Like, so for instance, it's correlated to people who have a cognitive bias of sunken cost fallacy. So let's say you're starting a business, and you invest $1 million in it, you're, or let's say just you invest $5,000 in it, you're very unlikely to shut down that business because you already invested money. You feel like you lose the money if you stop that business. And that's what's called sunken cost fallacy. If it's not a good business, you know, don't throw good money after bad.
Bad money, yeah.
Or like, for instance, in people have this cognitive bias. Let's say if you bought an apartment in St. Louis, and someone wrote an article, St. Louis is dead forever. Here's why. You're going to be very upset because you have sunken cost fallacy, because you've invested in the city, and you can't be wrong. Your brain doesn't want you to be wrong. So you'll get very upset and maybe even angry at the person who would write such a foolish article about St. Louis.
See, that's why I never own anything. Like, if you didn't own anything, you wouldn't be angry at anything.
I agree. I think there's a trade-off. But, you know, also, being aware of these cognitive biases, you know.
Who makes up the names to these cognitive biases? I mean, it's kind of funny.
I don't know. Let's read. Let me go to the cognitive bias list.
I mean, like.
Yeah. I mean, now that you mentioned it, I'm kind of curious. I think it's just, Is it created by one individual? I think it's created by like a list of people.
Well, a lot of them are named by Daniel Kahneman and his partner.
Amos
Tversky. But let's see. So there's various types, but here's like.
What about, I wish I was you, cognitive biases. Can we just make it very simple? It's called jealousy.
Yeah, the jealousy bias.
The jealousy. Yeah. No, I wish I was you bias.
I thought there was a bias like that, right? I wish I was you bias.
I don't know.
I just made it up.
Oh, here's a list of biases. Hold on a second.
Uh-oh. I like to watch my wife fail. Bias.
No, you did not fail. Okay, here's one that's interesting. This one's called ambiguity effect, the tendency to avoid options for which the probability of a favorable outcome is unknown. So if you have to make a decision, this is why, like, if you have to make a decision about, like, you ever have a fight with your girlfriend or boyfriend where you can't pick what movie? Like, there's 100 movies in the video store or on the channel. All of them are probably pretty good. You can't tell which one's better. You literally cannot pick
a movie to watch.
Yeah, or if like you have to go to Uber Eats and pick a restaurant, or what kind of food you want? Mexican, Thai, Japanese, American, or New Orleans? Like they all sound pretty good.
Like a first world problem.
Right.
First world bias.
Well, you can use this. Let's say it's a conference, and for whatever reason, you're the last person giving a talk. You can use ambiguity bias by saying, hey, let's give a round of applause for all the great speakers who appeared before me. And everybody applauds. And then suddenly this is a kind of ambiguity bias. People will forget everybody else and will think of your talk as the best talk by the time you're finished.
Right.
So it kind of is a public speaking trick.
That's great.
Right. There's also another bias going into it, right? It's like an in-group and out-group.
Well, okay. Yeah. So then in-group bias is, okay, remember when, I don't know how many people saw the movie 8 Mile, but remember when Eminem said, everybody in the 313, put your hands in the air and follow me. So 313 is the area code of kind of the poor area of Detroit, the 8 Mile area. And so his entire audience is black and he's white. And so he kind of changes the group by saying, hey, it's not that we're black or white. It's that we're 313 or not 313. Right. And the guy he's competing with in the rap contest is black, but not 313. He's a rich kid. And that's how Eminem kind of like, he uses in-group bias. I don't think he consciously knows this, but he's using in-group bias to get everybody on his side versus his opponent in the rap contest.
Yeah, so it's just like the example that you just used, right? So when you say like, hey, clap for the rest of the other people, the other people sort of like the out-group now. And then the in-group is you and the audience.
It'd be kind of interesting to figure out how to, when someone uses that certain bias or a bias towards you, how to unravel it. Or do you know what I mean? Like going through these biases and seeing, okay, well, somebody does that bias, then this is what you should do.
Well, I think awareness.
That's kind of a cool thing.
I think awareness does it. Like if you kind of are really aware, hey, one trick this guy might do is in-group bias, even though they don't really
know that they're doing it.
Right, but like if you're the audience and you kind of are aware, I think that can help a little bit. But you have to be like really aware all the time.
Because a lot of time, like I felt like that's when the persuasion technique comes in too. Like because a lot of time you just think about how to persuade people and try to like negotiate with people, right? Yeah. So like you like all the biases might not. In your mind when you are doing negotiations. Like you might have a couple biases in mind, but not all of them.
There's another one called the recency illusion, which is like, if you're a lawyer, you always want to make the last closing argument because people have a bias to think more about the last person who spoke. So, you know, some people is very obvious. Some people like, they always just believe whoever the last person they spoke to. So if you're like, pitching a business to a bunch of venture capitalists, you kind of want to be the last one pitching for the day. And then they'll think about your project more than they'll think about the other ones.
right. I felt like that's good on dating too. Let's say like that you in the bar, there's like one girl and there are a couple guys right there talking to that girl. You have to be like the last one to show them like you are alpha male, then talk to the girl at the last one, you know?
Yeah,
so they
like,
think about you.
Sorry about all those losers you just had to speak to. Now you get to speak to me.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, this also works on casting too. It's funny because when I do theater productions back in Malaysia, like when I cast people, like I generally will think about or thought about like a few contestants that's like really, really like towards the end, like not so much in the beginning or not so much in the middle, unless they're like really, really, really good or talented. And
here's one that is very common: survivorship bias. So let's say you notice that every actor in Hollywood is really good looking. You think to yourself, well, I'm good looking, so I'm going to go to Hollywood and be a great actor. I mean, like, look at me. I could probably win 5 Oscars. I'm so good looking. And, you know, as Robin will attest. And you guys, I don't know if you've ever thought you could go to Hollywood. I don't know if you would succeed or not, but I definitely would succeed.
Wait, hold on. Have you looked at my skin color and my ethnicity? I'm pretty sure I can succeed in this day and age. You know?
Yeah, if the movie was Crazy Rich Asians, but
maybe Crazy Poor Asian,
but,
you know?
But so survivorship bias, though, is that there are probably many more good-looking people who went to Hollywood thinking they could be a good actor but didn't succeed. So we don't really know all the numbers of good-looking people.
They're called narcissists, right?
Yeah. Well, all of them probably are, but who knows? I've had some very good actors who weren't so good looking. Actually, it's kind of if you look at all the actors
against you, actually.
If you look at all the actors who have been on the podcast, most of them probably have not been that good looking.
Well, if you think about it, it's Willem Dafoe good looking. He's a pretty good actor.
Yeah, no, I think he's good looking.
Like Robert De Niro, is he good looking? It's more like he has that mafia type of like style.
Or just like character.
Not necessary. Yeah.
Character might not, actors.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, and this is one that's come up in another podcast many times, the Ben Franklin effect. So this one is a person who has performed a favor for someone is more likely to do another favor for that person than they would be if they had received a favor from that person. So
that's from Ben Franklin.
Yeah. So Ben Franklin didn't, the guy who hated him, Ben Franklin didn't do a favor for him because that guy would have hated him more. It's like, oh, this low life is doing a favor for me just to get me to like him. But instead, Ben Franklin asked for a favor. He asked if he could borrow a book from the guy. The guy lent him the book. And then after that, he liked Ben Franklin because it's using this bias that a person who has performed a favor for someone is more likely to do another favor for that person. And the base of that is their brain is telling them, oh, you're the kind of person who does favors for Ben Franklin. So the brain doesn't usually go against itself. And so
and it makes
if you're not
them feel
doing
good about themselves.
Yeah.
Right.
So, like they ask for a favor because they have status. So right. A lot of these things are related to kind of thinking, you know, humans are a tribal animal. And
that's
so,
right. And they
so
want
anyway,
and you attract the people people want to be around other people that make them feel good or just give them that special feeling.
Yeah.
Special.
Yeah, exactly. So anything you can do to give someone status, they're going to think kindly on you. Oh, this person agrees with my internal sense that I have a lot of status. Mm-hmm. So anyway, and then there's the Lake Wobegon. I don't know how to say the word Lake Wobegon effect that I think Garrison Keillor came up with, which is this is called illusory superiority. Overestimating one's desirable qualities and underestimating undesirable qualities relative to other people. So for instance, this is the 9 out of 10 drivers think they're better than average, or me pretending I'm thinking I'm good looking. So
wait, but it's overestimating ones like yourself or other people.
It's yourself or it could be other people. It could be like everybody in my town is really smart. So, or every parent thinks their child's a genius.
I thought about that when I lived overseas, when I was living in other countries. I would be like, ugh, I can't wait to get back to the U.S. I mean, they don't do that in the U.S.
Well, it's very common among parents. Every parent thinks their child is like a hidden genius somehow, and it's going to be realized at some point. Whereas most children really are not geniuses.
Or you're in a dysfunctions relationship. You think your partner is like really good looking or a good person. Maybe it's not.
Yeah, right. Okay, this is a great one. And this will be the last one I go with. This is called the IKEA effect. The tendency to, and this is really IKEA genius. Effect. Like, okay. I always ask myself, oh, I can't stand IKEA because I can't stand, you have to put everything together. Like, why can't they just sell it all put together? But they use it for a reason. Because this bias is named after IKEA. The tendency for people to place a disproportionately high value on objects that they partially assembled themselves, such as furniture from IKEA, regardless of the quality of the end product. So even if it's like a crappy table, if you put it together, you think it's like the best table in the world.
That doesn't work for me. I definitely don't have that one.
Right, well, but like you put me together and. Well, look at what happened. I'm just a wreck all the time.
I think that's for millennial or like they're kind of the zoomer because like it's all about the experience, right? It's all about the experience, not about the quality.
By the way, it doesn't mean you want to put things together. It just means once you put something together, you then think it's better than it actually is.
Yeah, because you did it yourself. You're like, yeah, this is my pride. My pride and my son.
That's
why. So Robin, like when you cook something, you don't think it's like if you cook pasta, you don't think it's better than someone else's pasta automatically? Yeah, you don't do that. I don't think you do that.
And when I do something that I think I'm not doing a very good job, I mean, I'm the first one to say, oh, I really suck at this.
Yeah. I mean, I'm the same too. Like when I did something, I'm like, ah, this sucks. And I just like, I'm not going to do it again.
Because you know, the thing is like, I always want to grow and learn. And if you have all these different biases, you're never going to grow.
Yeah, I think some biases are good. Yeah.
Right, but I mean, we have some may have more of it than others.
Yeah.
I think if you have it strongly, you're not going to learn, right? Because you think right.
Yeah, I do think that like the last couple biases that James mentions, those are the new biases. But I think the original 25 biases, I think it's 25. Original 25 biases, it's like what we subconsciously has. And then the later one, it's more like what the people nowadays have. So you might not have it. I might not have it.
No. I think all these biases, these go back to
just renamed.
Think about it. This goes back to like being cavemen. Like if you built your little hut, okay, this gives you, you get pleasure from it. So this gives you, you're more likely to participate in the function of building the hut instead of letting someone else do it because you're more proud of when you do it.
Right.
And well, so all like of these, those, like, I don't think this is like generation related. These are like, biases are what it means to be human is to have these biases. Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I felt like the IKEA effect is so tied to ego too. You know, if you have huge ego, you might
be
more inclined to have those.
Yeah. I mean, you're right, but we all kind of have egos. Kinda have like you kind of have to, that's the thing. Ego is not necessarily a bad thing unless you're egotistical, like it's too much. Like ego is just like, if you think you can't do anything, if you have no ego, then you won't do anything. So, this one happens all the time. It's hindsight bias. So people say, I knew it all along after they see past events as being predictable. So I remember, I'll tell you one little story and then that'll be it. So one time I was visiting Bernie Madoff at his hedge fund. A friend of mine worked there and I wanted to raise money from Bernie Madoff for my own hedge fund. So I went to the meeting, but on the way to the meeting, several of my friends who were hedge fund managers called me and said, hey, can you see if Bernie Madoff will take our money so we can invest with him? He doesn't take anybody's money. He's very exclusive about which money he takes. And of course we knew later because he didn't want sophisticated investors doing due diligence on him. But afterwards, I called every one of those people after the scam, you know, it was a $60 billion Ponzi scheme. After it was revealed, I called all of those people afterwards and they said, there's no way I could have called you and asked for that because I knew along that he was a fraud. Your phone number is in my phone. Like I see that you called me on that day when I was about to visit him. And I remember you asking why else would you call me? You didn't say, oh, Bernie Madoff's a fraud. No one said that to me. You asked if you could get into if I could find out if you could get into his fund. So you called me right before I met with him. But nobody would admit that. Everybody said, oh, we knew it all along. And nobody knew it all along. Otherwise, he would have gone to jail earlier. So anyway, the cognitive reflection test, both of you guys are you're not a guy, Robin. You're my wife. And Jay, you're producer of this extraordinary podcast.
I'm the system 2.5. I'm system 2 times, five times.
Right.
Think too much.
You use so much system 2 that you convince yourself of the wrong answers.
I know.
What bias is that?
That's system and I'm
system 2 biased.
Yeah.
I'll tell you this. After having COVID, when you have that brain fog, I felt like I was using much more gut or intuitive thinking than reflecting because I couldn't think. So I would use my gut to tell me things.
Yeah.
Right. So that's the cognitive reflection test. Try it out at cocktail parties. Use it on your friends. Make them feel like shit and act really smart when they don't know the answers. And this is the other name for this podcast is How to Make Friends and Influence People. So thanks, everybody. Thanks, Robin and Jay, for taking the test.
Okay. And thank you. Thank you for putting it in.
Robin, I'll see you in 3 minutes.